Talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long time.
We're back to the second hour of Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide on Civic Media, Madison, Waukesha, Wausau, Wisconsin Rapids, and soon elsewhere as well. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits. All points of view are welcome. And remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. We're going right back to the front lines of history in the making. And I'll tell you what, this one was a doozy. Ron Johnson, once again, part of the gang that couldn't shoot straight, shoots himself in the foot. This time, here's what he says. He says that if he gets reelected, he'll do everything in his power to make sure that Social Security money is invested in the stock market instead of U.S. Treasuries. Now, let me tell you why that's a bad idea and why that's a dangerous idea. When Social Security was set up, it was passed in 1935. The Republicans voted against it. They were opposed to Social Security. Then they were opposed to Medicare in the 1960s when Lyndon Johnson proposed it. They're opposed to Medicaid. But then what they always do, and Franklin Roosevelt realized this, they always then say in the next election, well, we're really for it, we just want to improve it. And Franklin Roosevelt was great. He gave a speech. He said, the Republicans tried to sabotage it in 1935, the Social Security. Now they say they want to improve it. Sure they do. Sure they do. Go on YouTube and listen to that speech. It's a great speech. Ron Johnson does not want to improve Social Security. He wants to eliminate Social Security because that's money that could be used as tax cuts for the upper 1%. Now, what does it mean when he says that it should be put in the stock market? Let me tell you something about the stock market. There's a book, if you are at all interested in reading, and this is for the average person, the layman, nothing technical, about how not to do stupid things in investing your money. It's called Winning the Loser's Game by Charles Ellis, E-L-L-I-S, Winning the Loser's Game. He was a director at Vanguard for a long time. And what he says is, he advises just putting money into a bond market index fund and a stock market index fund. Say the S&P 500, and the total bond market at Vanguard, for instance, and leave it alone. Don't even read a newspaper. Adjust it from time to time if one gets a little more than the other in the allocation. You know, in the last 100 years, the stock market averaged about 10.5%, but some years it was down 40%, and some years it was up 30%. Because of the Vietnam War from 1969 to 1979, it didn't move at all. It didn't make anything at all. It was under 1,000. The Dow was under 1,000. Now it's, what, 30-some-odd thousand. So if you happen to be drawing Social Security in a year, the stock market's doing well, yeah, there's money for you. But under Johnson's theory, if you invest in the stock market and it's doing poorly, you're going to get a lot less. You may get nothing at all. The other thing is, when you invest it with Wall Street, Wall Street gets a big slice. I have never seen a poor broker. Have you ever seen the offices of brokers? Have you ever seen their homes and their cars? That money comes from somewhere, and it comes from you, the amount that you could have paid, you could have made. You know, in your life, you may have a pension, you may not, you may be successful financially, you may not be, there may be reasons for that. You may have a 401k or a 403b, or you may not. But day in, day out, you'll always have a Social Security check when you're 65. It won't be a large check. It could be $1,200, $1,500, $2,000, $3,000. But it'll probably be enough to pay the rent, some of the rent and food, and you can kind of get by. Whereas before 1935, one reason there was a depression, there were a lot of people who had no money at all, and they certainly had no pension. There were no labor laws, they get fired. The owners of the companies would hire Pinkertons to beat them and in some cases shoot them. And they'd be living in little hovels around in rural areas or, you know, little apartments, live with relatives, scrounge. My father wrote a novel called The Bronx Boy. It's about his growing up. He went to Fordham University in the Bronx when he got out of the Marine Corps. And my mom worked for the phone company and put him through. And during the Depression, apparently, back in the 30s, now he was in there after the World War II, after 1945, but in the early 30s, there was a guy called the Meistersinger. And he would come around into the apartment buildings and they had a central courtyard and he'd start singing. And he had a hat in front of him. And he'd say, "I am a poor man. I have a wife and three children. I have no money. Please throw me your coins." And then he'd sing. He was a very good voice. People lean out the window, they clap, and they throw a few coins down. They go to the next apartment building. That's the kind of stuff they did. There were bread lines, soup lines. You'd line up, get some food, and bring it home to your family. Franklin Roosevelt had the idea, you know, why not do something different? Why not have every employee and every employer pay a little something in so that when they retire, they'll get a check and they don't have to sing in the courtyards of the apartment buildings in the Bronx, and they also don't have to go to soup lines. You know, they can go down, buy a pound of hamburger and some bread and milk, and, you know, they can eat. And so people who retired, this money was there. And it's still there. And it's still there for Medicare. Now, what Johnson said a couple of weeks ago was he said it should be discretionary. He didn't say then that he wanted it in the stock market. You may remember he said that they should pass a budget, pass a defense, tax cuts, and anything left over should be used for Social Security. Well, I got news for you. What's left over wouldn't fund Social Security the way you know it now. You would not get a check for $1,200, you get it for $600. You wouldn't get it for $3,000, you get it for $1,500. And then in a good year, you might get a few bucks more. In a bad year, they keep whittling it down, whittling it down, whittling it down. And the ultimate objective of the Republican Party, and they had this out as a platform, but as you know, they don't have a platform anymore because they realized that people read the platform and didn't like what they read. But their stated objective is to privatize Social Security and Medicare, voucherize Medicare. Now, what does that mean? Privatized Social Security means that you would be permitted, it's like a 401k, you'd put, you know, I don't know, $100 a month in the equivalent of a 401k. They'll call it a Social Security 401k. And your employer will put in something. And then you can invest it any way you want. We invest it in the stock market. Well, most people, when it comes to financial investment sense, don't have enough firepower between their ears to blow their hat off, okay? Let's be blunt. They invest in Japanese small caps. They invest in cryptocurrency. They invest in Bitcoin, and they get taken to the cleaners. If you go to a big firm like JP Morgan, they take a very large fee, a couple of percent. So at the end, you're not going to have the same as your Social Security now. And if you had the misfortune to retire in the 1970s, or in, how about 2002, 2003 after the downturn? How about 2008 and 9? The S&P 500 lost 40%. You'd have a check that was a little over half of what you normally had. Do you really want that? Do you really want to go back to pre-Franklin Roosevelt? Johnson is saying this because Johnson doesn't need Social Security. You know, the maximum check from Social Security might be $4,000 a month or $5,000, well, $4,000 a month. He doesn't need $4,000 a month. He has tens of millions of dollars. What he needs is a tax cut. You've got to understand that. When these guys say something, it's not intended to help you, it's intended to help them. But it's disguised as supposedly helping you. So how dumb are you? I mean, it really comes down to that. How dumb are you? You're not dumb at all. You're a good person. You don't have time to think about politics. You don't have time to think about a lot of stuff. But consider what the Republicans say and consider what the Democrats say. The Democrats invented Social Security. Democrats invented Medicare, invented Medicaid. It's a safety net. Nobody's saying you should exist only on Social Security, but at least it's a safety net. If you had to, you could take a much more modest apartment and you could afford food. Under the Republicans, you'd be at the mercies of Wall Street. Wall Street does not exist for mercy. There's nobody on Wall Street who's poor. There's nobody on Wall Street who has a shabby office or drives an old car or lives in a bad part of town. And that is because that comes out of your investments. So when Johnson a few weeks ago goes, Social Security and Medicare should be discretionary. We should reevaluate them every year or every 2 years when we do a budget. And as you know, they don't do a budget. They do a budget resolution because they stand in opposed to it. And they filibuster a budget. And they'll assign an amount, and it'll keep going down and down for Social Security. Now he realized he got caught. So he says, let's put it in the stock market. We'll do really well. Anytime you have a guy come to your house and say, I got a real good investment for you in the stock market, Chinese small caps, Japanese small caps, Bitcoin, cryptocurrency, marijuana, all this stuff you read in the paper, you don't know enough to invest. Most people should invest in mutual funds from reputable companies like Vanguard, T. Rowe Price, Fidelity. Put it in 50-50, 60-40 stocks and bonds. If you're very young, maybe 80-20. And then don't read a newspaper. It's meaningless. Read Winning the Loser's Game by Charles Ellis. It's worth every cent you're buying it, believe me. And if you vote for Ron Johnson or Rick Scott, the head of the Republican Senate Campaign Committee, who said that everybody should pay some taxes, even people making 12 grand a year, so they have skin in the game. And he took the fifth in a Medicare fraud grand jury. You're going to deserve what you get. Going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
Cut you down. Tell them that God's going to cut you down. Tell them that God's going to cut you down.
And director, lines are open, 844-967-2789. Mentioned Rick Scott. Rick Scott, last segment, Rick Scott, the U.S. Senator from Florida. He was the governor of Florida before that. He talks about maybe running for president. Moscow Mitch McConnell, made him the head of the Republican Senate Campaign Committee. And that is a job where he's supposed to go around the country, campaign for Republican Senate candidates and raise money for them. So he has hundreds of millions of dollars from donor money in his control. Well, now it looks as if there's some questions about what happened to that money. Let me give you a little background on Rick Scott. Before he was governor, Rick Scott was the head guy at a healthcare, Columbia HCA, healthcare company, Medicare company, provided Medicare services. And a grand jury was convened alleging Medicare fraud under him. They dragged him in front of a grand jury and he took the fifth. He took the fifth, guess how many times? 75 times he took the fifth. What is your name? I take the fifth. Well, you can't. Okay, what's your name? All right, Rick Scott. Okay, were you the president of Columbia HCA? I take the fifth. I take the fifth. I take the fifth. The company settled with the Department of Justice for $1.7 billion in fines for Medicare fraud. $840 million in 2000, $881 million in 2002. Rick Scott walked off with a lot of cash. He thought, well, I need a job. I know, I'll be governor of Florida. Clown ran for governor of Florida, and he won. Democrats said, hey, he took the fifth. Florida says, oh, we like that, apparently. I don't know what's with those voters down there, frankly. We like that. Well, now there's so much money that can't be accounted for in the money from donors that he's supposed to be doling out that they've canceled buys. They canceled $5 million in Pennsylvania. He said, well, I don't really think that Oz can win. Over $2 million in Wisconsin. He didn't say it, but it means, you know, they don't think that Ron Johnson can win. $2 million in Arizona. They think that Blake Master can't win against Mark Kelly. A lot of people say, now, wait a minute. Now, wait a minute. Let's have an audit of that fund. You're a guy that took the fifth 75 times out of $1.7 billion Medicare fraud. You go, yeah, but I was elected governor. Yeah, well, apparently they have very low standards down in Florida. They elected Matt Gaetz to Congress, for Pete's sake. We want an audit. Rick Scott is now fighting an audit of the money that was entrusted to him to help elect Republican Senate candidates. We go to the lines. Nick of Madison, my friend, you're first. What's on your mind today, Nick?
Hey, Matt. Good to talk to you. I just wanted to call because, you know, you mentioned, you know, FDR did this and, you know, whatever. But here's the thing, okay? FDR imprisoned illegally hundreds of thousands of American citizens just because they were Japanese. I cannot stand when people hold up FDR as someone to emulate. That's really, that just got my goat. That's all I was saying.
Okay, Nick, no, I appreciate you calling in, and I like it when you call in. You are one of the people who call who I would say is a principal conservative. I really value you, people like you. I think we absolutely need two parties in this country, and I'd like to see a person like you with your views. It really informs our dialogue. Let me say this about FDR. You're saying that he imprisoned people of Japanese descent. The U.S. Supreme Court upheld it. You know, it's not as if he did it illegally. And let me say a couple of other things, because in the 1970s or early 80s, Reagan engineered some payments to him. But at the time, there was tremendous fear on the West Coast. When the Japanese go in somewhere, they rape all the women, torture them, and kill them. They did it in China. They did it in the Philippines. And you see, in the 1940s, you couldn't tell we were going to win the Second World War. My dad was in the Marine Corps in the Second World War. If you didn't win it and they invaded California, they would have raped all the women, tortured them. And people were very, very afraid. The second thing is, obviously, they're very fine people in the Japanese population, but there were also Japanese sympathizers in California. And everybody got rounded up. They were not injured. They were not beaten. They were fed. People were afraid of what the Japanese did in China, and they did not want it to happen in California. Franklin Roosevelt did that, and I got news for you. Everybody thinks, oh, well, that was a terrible thing. Yeah, in a sense. If we were confronted, and I'm going to throw this out and think about this long and hard. If we were confronted with a sustained attack by a unified jihadist movement right now that was going to try to do to the United States what they're doing in Africa, going down and murdering Christians throughout Africa, Al-Shabaab and Al-Qaeda. In other words, if they weren't a clown operation, if they were a bigger deal, I would say in a heartbeat, people would round up anybody in this country who appeared sympathetic to them and intern them in a humanitarian way. And you may say, Matt, you're crazy. I am not, believe me. When you are facing potential extermination, which is what the Japanese did wherever they invaded, in China, in the Philippines, anywhere else. You know, you think of the Nazis as a master race. Well, there are different races that think that the same. And the Japanese felt it about themselves. The Russians think of themselves, they're Slavic, and obviously a lot of Slavs, but they think of themselves as a master culture. In Iran, they think they're Aryans. That's why they call it Iran. Aryan. The original Aryans coming out of India, they feel it. They're not Arabs. They hate Arabs. There are people who do this kind of stuff. So, Nick, thanks for the call. The lines are live. I'll get to you soon. We're going to break. Lines are open, 844-9. Back to Matt Flynn, director. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Dick of Madison, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Dick?
Well, real quickly, your last caller, I wonder how he feels about the situation with people crossing the border being sent into northern cities that the Republican Party's up to now. That's about on a par with the same thing. It's not why I called, though. They're showing all these polls, and I know you've seen them, about the enthusiasm gap is closing. The Democrats are doing well in all these Senate races. I get this, and it does look promising. But there's one thing that still scares me to death in all of this. I think, personally, we're going to have turnouts like a presidential year, or we're still in trouble because of reading this article about how many million people they purged from the voter rolls in different states around the country, the type of voter suppression they'll pull, and intimidation of all these poll workers. Last week, a bunch of them in Texas just said, no, we're not up for this. You know, they know that's about the only way they can win, and they'll stop at nothing. And even though these races look promising, the Senate, I think we're probably maybe going to gain a couple seats, but the House scares me where you don't have a statewide situation. And it's all because of these things these Republicans have done in all these different states.
Yeah, Dick, you hit right on the head, probably the key issue right now. Let me give you a little background and a little expansion on that. We should win a couple of Senate seats, and we should do pretty well in the House. But a poll, somebody can say, I'm a voter, I'm going to be a voter, but there's many a slip twixt the cup and the lip, and here's what's going on. In Florida right now, there's a primary tomorrow in Florida, by the way, Tuesday. And in that primary, they're going to find out who's going to run against DeSantis, for instance. They have implemented severe voter restrictions, and they're going even further. They are studying the Texas laws that were put in after 2020, so that in Texas, they already had their primary. The 2022 primary in Texas already occurred. 12% of mail ballots were rejected. 12%. Before that, it was only 2%. There were six times more mailed ballots rejected. Texas passed criminal laws. The key in all of this is to pass criminal laws, where if a poll worker interferes with the line of sight, L-I-N-E-O-F-S-I-G-H-T, of an observer to a voter, is a criminal offense and you can go to jail. What does that mean? Now, you vote in Wisconsin, most of the people listening to this. You vote in Wisconsin. And in Wisconsin, the people at the polls, certainly the polls here in Milwaukee that I've voted in, specifically elderly ladies and a couple of elderly gentlemen, they're wonderful people. Republicans and Democrats, they play it by the book. They sit there and they go, what's your name? They say this to me, and I've been voting there for 40 years. What's your name? Your address? Matt, what's your name? What's your address, Matt? Let's see your driver's license. Give you a ballot. In Texas, you can have partisan observers standing right behind them, glaring. You don't have that here. And they will intimidate, especially in urban areas. They'll try to intimidate seniors, students, and ethnic and racial minorities. If a poll worker stands up to get a drink of water, to hand you your ballot in Texas, and momentarily crosses the line of sight of one of these thugs, they've committed a criminal offense. Now, Are they going to charge it in every case? No. Will they charge it in a Republican area? Absolutely not. But they will charge one or two, and they scare folks. They also look at the rolls, and if there's anyone who votes while he's still on probation, that's a felony. And there's a woman in jail for 5 years down there for this. Coming to the end of her parole, and a guy as well. Burglary, and they have 2 months to go. But at the last parole hearing, they said, you know, congratulations. Basically, you don't have to come in anymore. You're done. But technically, they were on, so say June. This is a year ago, this is 2021. So they go in and vote in a spring primary 2 months before it ends, 5 years in jail. The use of criminal sanctions to scare folks is the most disgusting and pernicious aspect of this, because everybody, especially in minority communities, who has anything wrong, you know, even if they had a drunk driving ticket, even if they had a misdemeanor, none of that applies to disable you. They'll get scared. In Texas, they are looking to put people in prison and scare folks. Florida is studying that. Going to the lines, Robert of West Allis, my friend. Thanks for calling Western Mind today, Robert.
Good morning. I guess the upcoming election here, I hope they really go scorched earth on Ron Johnson. I mean, there's tons of accomplishments that, you know, Biden has done at the national level. He's got more debt in 1 year than Trump could probably do in 8 years. You know, so they can rattle off those, and they can be very positive, and they can list them. But, you know, watching the ads on TV, he looks like a reasonable person. And I think they need to highlight that he's not a reasonable person. And what their party is doing right now isn't reasonable. It's anti-democratic, anti-freedom. It's extreme, you know, extreme views on voting, extreme views on, you know, what a woman can do with her body, extreme both views on guns, extreme both, you know, views on democracy. So I really hope the campaign highlights that. Yes, you can highlight some achievements that you've made, but really show these guys for what they are. Unfortunately, there's a lot of voters out there. I think they vote out of fear. So the idea that the government is trying to tell them what to do or take rights away from them is going to be a lot more appealing with some of the people they're trying to appeal to, rather than just talking about all the great accomplishments they have. I don't think that's going to be enough, because Johnson and some of these other people that are pushing that agenda, they still look fairly reasonable if you're not paying attention, knowing that, you know, they didn't want to tax corporations 15%, you know, they're voting against veterans, stuff like that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Let me tell you how I analyze that race. Right now, one poll came out right after the primary, and Mandela Barnes was ahead 7 points over Johnson. And then a Fox poll came out, they said 5%. But the real key there is well over 50% have a negative view of Johnson. Now, there is a theory, and I subscribe to it, that when you have an incumbent like that, this election's a referendum on him. It almost doesn't matter who you put up. The referendum's on him, as long as you put up somebody who's semi-competent and hasn't angered people. And the thing about Mandela Barnes is, I know Mandela. He's a solid guy, a good guy. He was a good assemblyman, and I think he'd be a good senator. And he's certainly in the mainstream. And he's a nice guy. I mean, he hasn't offended anybody. Now, they are going to spend the next 2.5 months. You know, right now it's August, it's going to the end of August, we're talking beginning of November, about 2.5 months, sliming him beyond belief. They've already started it. They've already run videos of Ilhan Omar and AOC and, you know, same things he wants to do for immigrants and all this. It's going to get a lot worse. I mean, it's going to get really a lot worse. They're going to try to define him. Now, he has a lot of support, and I know he's going to define himself, and he's already done that, showing, you know, his folks, good folks, hardworking and so forth, and he grew up in a middle-class background and all that. But I think That's right. Johnson comes across as, you know, you look at him and he looks like a reasonable guy, but you got to look at what he's saying. Some of the newspapers in the state, including the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, have run front page editorials, which is very rare, saying he's not competent and fit to be in the Senate. That's very rare. It's very, very rare. He's not a normal Republican. Now, he hasn't come across as a QAnon type, and he hasn't come across even as a stop the steal guy. There was a taped conversation he had with a former chairman of the Republican Party for the 8th Congressional District, which is the Green Bay area. And in that conversation, the guy said, why aren't you going after the election? And why aren't you denouncing the Trump people for going after the election? And he said, if I do that, I won't win. I need these people. But he hasn't been as upfront about the steel stuff as others. And Trump hasn't stuck his nose into that race as much. So he's flying under the radar. He absolutely is a stop the steal guy. You know, he was prepared not to certify in the Senate, not to certify Joe Biden. The only reason he ended up voting, you know, not trying to stop it was because of January 6th. He's afraid he'd be swept up in that. But, you know, you have people like Grothman and Tiffany who did vote not to certify Joe Biden. So basically, Ron Johnson's flying under the radar, but look at what he said. He said he doesn't trust the FBI and the CIA. He said that publicly. And that was when he was the chairman of the Subcommittee on Homeland Security in the Senate when the Republicans had the Senate. But he said that. He said that Social Security should not be guaranteed. It should be discretionary and reevaluated every budget. He said that. He said that the Social Security should be invested in the stock market, which would end up with wild swings and in the long run, privatize Social Security. In other words, just private accounts managed by Wall Street. He said that. Some very strange stuff I don't understand about the guy. On July 4th, 2018, he went to Moscow, Russia, and we still don't know who he met with, and we don't know why he went there, and we don't know what he said. Now, most folks, when they go to Moscow, Russia, you'd think what they would go, well, I'm not going to go on July 4th. On July 4th, there are plenty of parades around the state. You should be in those parades. And if I'm going to go, I'm going to say why I'm going. For instance, he did it in 2018. In 2014, Putin had already invaded Ukraine, murdered people in Crimea, took it over in 2008, beat to death a guy named Maginsky in jail, who is an activist over there. Why are you going there? Why aren't you telling? He is an under the radar bat. He flies under the radar at night. So people, just pay attention. That's the way I see this. Wisco Paul, my friend, we have a couple of minutes before the break. What's your mind today, Wisco Paul?
Good morning, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. Senator Johnson has done zero for the people of Wisconsin. The only accomplishment is for the very, very wealthy when he voted for Trump, and he actually held up for that vote. But the last thing you said here, Wisconsin has enough jobs, so don't worry about your jobs. I think that pertained to Oshkosh truck and the post office vehicles. That should be enough in itself to defeat this guy. But I, for one, cannot think of any accomplishments this man has had in the last 12 years. So, and Medela Barnes is a great person. I've met him on several different occasions. I'm afraid the Republicans are going to go totally negative in this campaign, and it's really getting down in the mud, and it's a sad thing. Anyway, thanks for taking my call this morning, Matt.
Yeah, thank you, Paul. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. You're right that when it came to Oshkosh truck, they went elsewhere. That was because Foxconn had refused to let them use the land. Foxconn is a scam, and Ron Johnson was a big part of it. So was Trump, Scott Walker, and Rebecca Clayfish. And they went to South Carolina. He said, fine, you know, we got plenty of jobs. These are jobs he's never held himself. He's never held a job like that himself. We don't have plenty of good paying jobs. So he's totally out of touch. They will try to slime Mandela. I know Mandela. He's a good man. He'd be a good senator. We're going to a break. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after. Back to Matt Flynn Director. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, we have a mystery. We're going to solve it right now. Holmes is on the case. Who is the deep throat that ratted out Trump and told the Justice Department where the documents were being held in Mar-a-Lago and what was there? Let me tell you what I think. Turned out in the last couple of days, we found out that the Department of Justice has already interviewed Pat Cipollini and Pat Philbin. They did it before the execution of the search warrant. Pat Cipollini, president's counsel, Pat Philbin, his deputy, both of them testified at the January 6th committee. I listened to their testimony. They have a lot of character. They were straightforward. They were honest. And they didn't hold back. Now, a lawyer has an attorney-client privilege with a client, but a lawyer is not permitted to participate in a client's crimes. He can defend the client in court, but I'll always remember UW Law School, criminal law class, professor said, remember the most important thing about criminal law. If you defend somebody in a criminal case and for some reason he's convicted and goes to prison, make sure you don't go along with him. You have to be very, very careful about this kind of stuff. There's little doubt in my mind that Pat Cipollini and Pat Philbin were truthful and honest. And when they were asked about documents, they answered truthfully and honestly. And I don't think there's a big deal about deep throat here. I think that was enough information for the Department of Justice to go forward. We'll see. One humorous wrinkle on that, Matt Gaetz, Trafficker Gaetz down in Florida, he has a primary opponent named Mark Lombardo. Mark Lombardo put on a priceless ad against Gaetz, Matt Gaetz, and it posed a question, quote, is Gaetz the informant? Matt Lombardo is sliming Matt Gaetz. I'll tell you what. I don't know how Matt Gaetz hasn't been charged already. His sidekick, running dog, and accomplice in the trafficking has already testified and gotten some favorable treatment, apparently, from prosecutors. The underage girls testified. Why is Matt Gaetz at large? Running for Congress? And Mark Lombardo fingered him better than anybody could in that district. Is Gaetz the informant? And his evidence is Trump hasn't endorsed Gaetz for re-election. Now, the reason Trump hasn't endorsed Gaetz probably is Gaetz is being widely discussed as being possibly a human trafficker. And Trump has plenty of access Hollywood problems about grabbing people in their private parts and doesn't want any part of it. I think that's just terrific. We're going to the lines. Jack of Milwaukee, my friend. Thanks for calling. Jack, what's in your mind?
Yeah, it's an honor to speak to a true patriot and a man who loves his country. I got a quick comment on this Jagoff Johnson. He's a snake in the grass. And if this man loved the people here in Wisconsin, my question is, when he gets off from Washington, why does he fly to his vacation home in Florida and charge the taxpayer expense for airfare? why doesn't he fight for the postal jobs like he did? He did nothing. He said, oh, we got plenty of jobs. So what is that telling you? How dumb are you? I'm quoting you, what you said earlier in the show. That's my comment. Thank you for the airtime.
Yeah, Jack, those are excellent comments. Yeah, and I want to get back to what you just said about the jobs. Wisco Paul talked about it too. just so everybody knows, what happened was Oshkosh and Intel, for that matter, both wanted to put a plant in the land that somehow the government under Scott Walker turned over to this Chinese company, Foxconn. It was, frankly, it's a scam. They said they were going to make large screen TVs, small screens. They were going to make electric toasters, electric cars. They were going to be a consulting. And in the meantime, they rack up $1 billion with a B, site preparation, and a lot of other stuff. And they're blocking use of the land. Oshkosh wanted to make electric post office vehicles there. Foxconn said they were going to make electric vehicles. They never did anything. They're never going to do anything. So Oshkosh said, all right, we'll do it in South Carolina. They wanted to do it in Wisconsin. What did Ron Johnson say? Did he fight for it? Did he go to Oshkosh and go, you know, I'm your senator, please, what can we do? No. He said, we have enough jobs in Wisconsin. No, we don't. No, we don't. Every job has dignity, and I've taken a lot of them myself. I've worked in food service, worked at the post office. I worked in a lot of different stuff growing up. However, Oshkosh wages are different from McDonald's wages. There's dignity in work, all work at McDonald's or anywhere else. Oshkosh wages are good wages with benefits, and they have long-term prospects, and you learn a skill. Those kind of jobs are not growing on trees. It is absolutely contemptuous and dismissive and condescending of Johnson to say we have plenty of jobs. Not every job is equal in pay. Some pay more. Some have benefits. Some they make you do a split shift and screw up your schedule. The kind of jobs Oshkosh was bringing, we do not have too many of them in this state. And he said it contemptuously, dismissively, and that is the fact. The second thing is, in terms of flying to Florida, the guy flies to places and bills taxpayers. Okay, he should be able to bill for a flight back to Wisconsin, a flight to Milwaukee, to Green Bay. You know, he's the senator, you know, Madison, La Crosse, Mid-States, whatever. But he shouldn't bill them for vacation flights. That's on him. And he's a very wealthy guy, which is fine. You know, I think that the honest accumulation of wealth is a good thing. Some wealthy people who got it through securities fraud and tax fraud should be criminally charged. But the ones that did it with good businesses, I applaud them. They create jobs, and that's good. But we shouldn't have to pay for their vacation travel. I mean, that's the point that Jack was making. The other one I get back to is a Navy veteran. I'll tell you this. What kind of guy goes to Moscow, Russia in 2018 on 4th of July? You can say it's, first of all, why does he go there? Why doesn't he file a report of why he went there, who he met with, and what he said? What was his purpose of going to Moscow, Russia? You don't go there on vacation. I've been to Moscow, Russia with a delegation from the Justice Department where we were sponsored by the State Department. We were giving talks to people in the Russian legal system about, and this is during the thaw, during Glasnost in 1997. You know, nice enough city, but you wouldn't go to Moscow, Russia on vacation. You went there for a purpose. What was it? 4th of July, I mean, this is a guy who said he doesn't trust the CIA and the FBI. To me, that's a major issue as well. We come to the end of the show. It's a great show. Great call-ins as always. Matt Flynn Direct, we'll be back same time, same place tomorrow. I'm signing off for today.